Okay, we're having a couple little technical difficulties, so I apologize for that. But we do have Mick on the phone. Mick, how's it going?
Hey, everything's good. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, sorry about this mic screw-up. For some reason, the main microphone just is not working. So I've got a backup microphone, and we're ready to go.
Hey, we'll do the best we can, and we're on the air, right?
We are on the air, yeah.
Making for great radio already.
That's right. So you're doing a stand-up comedy show right here near Albany, right in Scotia. Is this your first?
Say it differently?
Sure.
Right here, near Albany, in Scotia. There you go. That's what's known as a cheap pop in wrestling.
Is this your first time performing in the area, or have you been through?
Oh, let me see. No, I'm not doing comedy. I'm trying to think if I've done any speaking like at a college. And I don't even think I have. I did that for quite a bit in the earlier part of this decade. But I think this will be the first time.
Oh, cool. So now you've been doing comedy for a couple years?
Yeah, off and on. I did it for several shows, maybe a dozen shows or more, where the guys who were booking the show were maybe a little too ambitious. They were like putting us in the same theater that Elvis used to play in Vegas, you know, like 3,500 people. And like the Vegas show, for example, we had 400 people in there, but they put all the VIP people to the side of the stage, which is about 200 people. Then you look out in the 3,500 seater and you see 200 people. It literally looked like, you know, just a smattering. So I kind of regrouped this year and accepted that, you know, things were going to be done on a smaller level, but I've really enjoyed it and caught the eye of the Reverend Bob Levy, and so he had the idea to put this little, you know, this little troupe together for what should be a couple of really fun shows.
It sounds like an incredible lineup. It should be a lot of fun.
I hope so. I think so. And I have to tell you guys, before I got on, I mean, the first question I asked before I got in the air, I was like, hey, what's the format of the show? And I was ready, you know, grudgingly, to talk to more wrestling fans, you know, on a wrestling show.
Right.
And try to talk just a little bit about comedy. And then you guys were like, oh, it's a comedy show. I was like, oh, all right. Now
we will,
I need to be funny.
Mostly talk about comedy. We'll do a little bit of wrestling talk, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, that sounds good, man.
Now, I kind of, going from, you know, a celebrity into doing stand-up for your first time, is there, like, extra pressure on you to, like, how do you get ready for a show when you haven't really had, like, the years of doing stand-up before having, you know, a headlining show?
Well, you know, I mean, I did do a bunch of speaking at colleges, but the difference
right.
there was no emphasis on being funny, and that was just kind of like the frosting on the cake. Actually, with the exception of a couple of events I did, like at Notre Dame, where it was, like, Authors Week, you know, and specifically mm-hmm. authors who got into writing in a, you know, an unusual fashion. No one really told me what to say, and so nobody ever said, "Hey, go out there and, you know, go out there and kill or break a leg." So when I did get the chance to do comedy, I was used to telling humorous stories, but you find out in a hurry there's a difference between telling stories that are humorous and stories that make people laugh out loud.
So, definitely.
It can be a world of difference. And, you know, my first few times in the comedy shows, I was like, wait a second, I've told these stories, and I know they're pretty good, but I think, you know, when the marquee says comedy, you know, you're playing under different rules.
So would you say a lot of your stand-up is based around, you know, your actual life?
Yeah, quite a bit. You know, I mean, I think quite a few comedians work that way, where they... Their stories are autobiographical, but they might take strange turns and twists.
Mm-hmm.
And like in my case, you know, so much of what I learned about life is formed in, you know, 25 years of traveling around the world with, like, the weirdest, most dysfunctional family ever. So, you know, there are people who go, I'm not really interested in wrestling. But, I mean, I think there are a lot of people who weren't interested in Tools, for example, who found Tim Allen to be funny.
Right.
You know, so it's a jumping off point. It helps inform my worldview. And I've had exposure to, you know, some very, very unusual characters with some really funny outcomes.
So basically, if someone has never watched wrestling before, they can go and enjoy your set. You don't have to be a hardcore
yes.
wrestling fan.
I mean, that's That's what I feel is the case, and I'm really happy when people who are not fans come out of their way at the end of the shows and tell me that. Like, I didn't know what to expect. I came with my friend, and I've learned along the way to be as inclusive as possible, so that if I'm telling a story about Vince McMahon, I don't just say Vince McMahon. I say Vince McMahon, the larger-than-life billionaire who, you know, who heads up WWE.
Right.
And, you know, I'll throw in a couple voices, but I always try to make sure that I keep people up to speed. And I, you know, it's funny because I'll hear wrestling fans go, "Yeah, no, that was great, but it's just for wrestling fans." Like, I think that's more a statement that a non-wrestling fan should be making. And, you know, much more often than not,
right,
they don't make it. They find it to be, you know, like when I base, you know, ending international terrorism based on being slapped in the face with a pair of breasts repeatedly, that's something that every guy can associate with. You know, just because it happened to me in a wrestling ring,
right,
doesn't make it any less true for a non-wrestler.
Right. Now, how long...
I kind of caught you there off guard, huh?
No, I'm thrown off. I'm looking in a completely different direction with this new microphone. It's kind of confusing
okay.
for me. I apologize. But now, you're a best-selling author. Now you've been a comedian, wrestler. I know you're a husband, father. You know, what comes first for you when you think of, you know, yourself?
Yeah. You know, celebrity wife swap contestant.
That's coming up, right?
That's right. Yeah, it's at the top of my resume. Yeah, I'll actually be the 31st. Big mystery was solved because I heard we were on the season finale, but then I also heard we were on the next show. And what happened is there's actually the State of the Union address being thrown in next
okay.
week. So
okay.
I was told while the thing was going on that, you know, ABC, you know, really liked it.
Cool.
And so I don't know if that's why they're putting it last, but we all thought, we all had a good time. Like, we were the one family that, you know, at the end of it was like, can we do this for a few more days? You know, this is working out pretty good.
So I guess just to limit my my question, you think for you right now, is comedy the number one thing?
Nah, well... You know what, I mean, I'll give you a serious answer, because that was a good question. I gave you a stupid answer.
You didn't give a stupid answer. That was a great, great answer.
You know what, I mean, I think once somebody came up to me and said, "Hey, you're the guy from Robot Wars," because I hosted a show called Robot Wars for a couple of years. And one person at a memorabilia show in the UK was absolutely floored because I was the author of Teetum Brown, which was a coming-of-age, a sensitive but really violent coming-of-age story. So I have yet to hear have someone actually come up and go, "Aren't you the comedian?" So it doesn't matter what I see myself as. You know, I think, you know, 99% of the people I encounter who are familiar with me in any way know me first and foremost as a wrestler. So there's really no need, you know, there's no use hiding from it. I think, you know, Mr. Brady tried doing that. It never works out well. Batman, you know, Adam West tried hiding from Batman for so many years,
right,
and then you finally learn to embrace it.
Right.
And realize that, although it is a double-edged sword, you know, that it cuts, you know, more often than not, it cuts in your favor.
Now, when I stumbled before, this was the question I was going to ask, and I just it dropped on my mind. So what I'm going to do is, after this interview, I'm going to re-edit it, and I'm just going to cut out the part where I stumbled, and we're just going to move this question in, all right?
Okay, sure. Go ahead.
Because it was a good flow. We're talking about material, what kind of material you did. I was wondering if Mr. Sacco ever comes up in your stand-up act.
Oh, man. You know, Mr. Sacco has come up a couple of times.
Okay.
You know, I don't actually have like a like a set, like a centerpiece of my show. But the closest thing I have is like where I reimagine how Daniel LaRusso's life would have turned out if instead of you know, having odd jobs done around his compound that would teach Daniel the secret art of karate, if Mr. Miyagi had instead worked in a seedy massage parlor. And I think part of my problem when it comes to comedy is that I'm used to wrestling where no matter how good something is, you know, one night you kind of discard it. You know, you might refer back to it, but it's kind of done.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in comedy, you know, you see something that works and you polish it up, and a lot of times it takes on a life of its own and
right.
becomes better and better the more you tweak it. And so I have learned to do the Mr. Miyagi bit, you know, instead of a solo bit where I do both voices. I've learned to incorporate, you know, other comedians on the show. And in one case, we had, a couple of independent wrestlers in the UK who just wanted to get involved somehow. So we ended up somehow working the sock into that routine. That was on the night when it wasn't, okay, we've done Daniel LaRusso working in a seedy massage parlor, but we haven't done Rocky Balboa playing Daniel LaRusso working in a seedy massage parlor. So, I use the same philosophy I did when I was in wrestling, because I did, like to think I did some pretty humorous things over the years. But I feel like, you know what, if I can entertain myself, then at least some of the people out there are going to be, entertained as well.
Now, how long were you considering doing stand-up before you actually, took the plunge and started?
Oh, man. Well, you know what? Guy just booked me at the Improv in L.A. And, just because you're at the Improv doesn't mean you have to make up all this stuff
right.
while you're up there. But I went up there with just a few ideas, and a couple of old stories. And it went pretty well. Like, it would have been probably a better learning experience if it had not gone well, but it was kind of cool because, you don't know, but I'm about to tell you, and then you'll know. But 80s adult film icon Christy Canyon is a pretty good friend of mine, and she and the gang from Playboy Radio were out in the audience. And so
oh, cool.
I was able to tell a personal story about Christy and, throw a little fantasy in there and then drop an F-bomb, which I hardly ever do. And the crowd was just in shock that I had dropped that F-bomb. But, I believe if you just do it once or twice a show that it can be pretty effective. So
yeah.
If I have one, rule before I go out there, it's like, okay, how can I drop this one or two most effectively? And then I get mad at myself if I use it in any other way, because that's kind of like using a chair shot unnecessarily in wrestling. It's just there to get a reaction because you're not confident in your other stuff.
Mm-hmm. Would you say trying something out in wrestling versus trying something out in comedy, which one is more difficult to...
here's the difference. I try out a lot of, a lot of stuff in wrestling that didn't work, and you just hope the video cameras are rolling, because a lot of times what didn't work would be more spectacular than what did, whereas in wrestling, you don't want any proof that those moments existed,
Right.
So that's the main difference. I mean, I try out new stuff every single show, well, probably way too much for my own good. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But sometimes, I guess just as in, trying to figure out a wrestling style, I took inspiration from Reggie Jackson, the baseball player, whose strikeouts are even more dramatic than his home runs. So sometimes it is fun to throw something out there and see it not work at all.
Right.
The same way it worked for, David Letterman or Johnny Carson, but instead of the slow burn, I'll have a different humiliating reaction to material that doesn't work.
Yeah. Now, I know you've written a bunch of books. Do you plan on maybe writing a book about your stand-up experiences?
Oh, I don't know. Honestly, it hasn't been noteworthy enough. I haven't had a great success or great failure. The stuff I've done right now would be more, I think, more appropriate for a reality show, because there are a lot of peaks and valleys.
Mm-hmm.
When you go out there and some nights you feel like you're on top of the world and some nights, you just obviously, that feeling doesn't work every night. And sometimes it's the same, you're telling a similar story and trying to figure out why it's not getting the reaction. Felt like personally, I've got a thing I do occasionally. I don't think I'll do it in Albany, but where I try to reimagine the writing of the great Skynyrd anthem, Sweet Home Alabama, and try to take people behind the scenes to the writing recording session where, you know, lead singer Donnie Van Zant, or Ronnie Van Zant, is having a tough time finding something actually positive to say about the state. And he finally, after throwing a tantrum, you know, he finally looks, ah, man, I'm so close to having a hit bleeping song, and the only problem is I can't think of one bleeping thing to say about this bleeping state. And then he finally looks up and he goes, wow, that sky is kind of blue. And I'd done it a couple times, and it was on YouTube, and I thought, you know, if I'm playing Birmingham and I don't have the guts to own up to this piece of material, then, you know, I'm completely useless. And so I owned up to it, and it turned out that nobody out there even knew I'd done it, you know. And so I was basically insulting. I didn't do the piece, but I talked about it, and nobody even knew that I had done a piece about it. And I was like, oh, here's a life lesson, you know. You don't remind people of your, you know, of your problems.
Right.
At least in that case, that probably would have been better left unsaid, because it kind of hurt the show.
Now, I've got a friend in studio. He's a fellow stand-up comedian. He's a huge wrestling fan, huge fan of yours. I told him he could join in on the interview, so make this is
yeah,
Jason.
Yeah, please do. Hey, can I put something out there? This is I like to do my own little marketing,
of course,
when I'm on the road. And so if somebody comes to the show because they have heard me talking or heard Reverend Bob talking last week, let me know, you know, because I'm always interested to figure out what it is that brings people out to a show.
Right. Cool. Well, Jason,
hey, what's going on, Mick?
How are you doing, Jason?
I'm doing pretty good. I reached out to you on Twitter. I was pushing real hard for Ethan to get this interview.
what was your name on there?
Comedian Jason S.
Yeah, I saw your things right before I left. You were talking about the show, right?
Yes. Yes, I
yes.
was.
And, do you know about my 10 tweets a week New Year's resolution?
I noticed that, yes.
Yeah, I saw something about that, too.
It's kind of a weird, you know, it is obviously a weird thing, especially in comedy, where you kind of have to build, make, you know, you have to create your own audience.
Right.
But I find if I don't have, like, a, you know, like a governor on me, that that's all I'll do is stay up into the wee hours of the morning just telling people about my shows. And the truth is, I mean, that's why I was so happy to be on this show, which is about comedy. But the truth is, even people who have really enjoyed me on wrestling, for the most part, you know, once you take them, they don't see how easy it is. I mean, not easy, but what, like a natural progression in storytelling, you know, going from the ring to going to the stages. And I think if they realize that, they would be more accepting of it. But it's been a real uphill struggle. And essentially, when I'm on there, I feel like a guy who's selling a product that people have clearly said they don't want. And then you're still like the guy in the infomercial, like, try it now, comedy, here. It's like, all right, no, we'll, you know, we want to see you bleed or, just show up, but just be on the show. We don't want to necessarily want to venture out and take a chance. So the same people who will stand in line, you know, for 2 hours at a, you know, at an autograph signing, a memorabilia store, even like a minor league baseball game, when you say, hey, yeah, you want to check out my comedy, they get noticeably awkward, you know, and uncomfortable. So it's I really appreciate anyone who takes it, you know, who goes out there. And unfortunately, I wish I had a, you know, massive crowds or people like, geez, tell you the truth, I'm a little disappointed. I thought you'd be much funnier than that. Almost everybody's like, wow, that was a lot better than I thought it was. You know, so I'm like hurdling a very small bar for expectations.
Now, have
but
you
go ahead, Jason. I didn't mean to talk so long.
Oh, I just wanted to say that I will be going to your show on Saturday. My fiance actually got me tickets to this and the meet and greet as a Christmas present.
Oh, cool.
Very romantic Christmas present. She's not a wrestling fan, but I'm hoping she's going to like the, you know, like the comedy. So
I hope so too.
It's very, it's really cool that you guys do the doing the meet and greets. That's a really cool way to give back to the fans.
Yeah, I think it's $10 extra, so we're not really giving back to the fans.
Well,
they're giving to us.
You're given an opportunity though. It's pretty cool.
I just reminded you, I better, I, you know what, to give you an example, you know, of the uphill struggle, it's like I've got these programs I made, and there's like, you know, there's like 20 color photos in the comedy program, but 9 out of 10 wrestling fans will take the 8x10 that's included in the comedy program for the same price. Like, but I've got all the pictures. There's 20 photos in here, including one of me in the Hell in a Cell with my tooth stuck in my nose. It's like, no, we'll take the wrestling photo. We don't want any proof that we were here.
Mick, you were on Monday Night Raw this past week. I was pleasantly surprised to see you show up there. There's been talk about you possibly coming back to wrestling to face either Dolph Ziggler or perhaps enter the Royal Rumble match itself. Is there any plans for that?
Well, you know, I did show up with the intention of, announcing my candidacy for the Royal Rumble, and that brought out Dolph. And that's good. I mean, it's good that people see a potential for a match based on one verbal interaction. And he's a guy who's real. I mean, there's a lot more to this guy than people know. He's very good with the microphone, but he hasn't had a chance. And so he was like kind of mean and funny, and he's amazing in the ring. Before that, I don't think anyone had even whispered about, hey, I wonder if Mick Foley and Dolph Ziggler will be in the ring. So I guess it's good that a single wrestling segment has people talking about it.
On Raw, it was also brought up the possibility of you and CM Punk. And in my mind, I think that's actually a dream match.
Oh, against?
Yeah.
You know, honestly, look, granted, I should have known better than to wear a light blue tie-dye on national TV. First time, people mentioned my moobs, which are, I guess, man boobs. And that's never been my problem. It's always been, like, the love handles and the big butt. I don't think I'm good enough anymore to wrestle a main event level match, and that's why the Rumble would be great, because you know no one man can single handedly ruin that match.
That's a good point.
Now I know I've heard a lot of stuff like wrestling's pre-scripted. Would you say that it almost, in some way, is kind of like improv comedy?
You know what, the guys who really, I guess it's the same way that a lot of comedians have different styles, where, some people work, heavily scripted. Some people like to freeform everything.
Right.
Some people do a combination of both. And even I think the guys who are best at it, the men and women, are the ones who at least give the impression that stuff is fresh, even if it's been, done many times.
Yeah.
And you hear, somebody, does a great show, and I turned around to somebody, I've seen Bob Saget, and I said, wow, that was a great set, and they were like, yeah, it was great last year when I heard the exact same one. And so I don't think it doesn't take away from the set as far as you're not doing it in front of that same audience, but, there's an example of a guy who prefers to have his stuff worked out, but it seems spontaneous.
Right.
But I still think the best wrestlers in the ring and on the microphone, are able to feel a crowd and gauge the intensity and make it feel real. I mean, almost all great wrestling interviews and matches are fueled by real emotions, even if there's no real anger towards the guy they're wrestling.
But in some cases, there are like actual, off TV, off the ring conflicts going on.
Yeah, but that's the same as with every workplace, except our, we're filled with some real, type A personalities.
Right.
So those conflicts might be resolved a little differently. But, I mean, in my history, I had the biggest, wildest, most frightening matches with people I could trust. And then when you get out there with someone you don't like and don't trust, it doesn't necessarily turn out to be that good.
Mm.
That makes any sense.
Yeah, it does.
Might be, I guess it's, in the same way, I'm, learning about improv, and I've seen a lot of people who are great at it, You want someone who's going to leave openings for you.
Right.
And help you look good. And, I was over in the UK, I was hearing about, a couple of pretty popular names who were looked down upon in comedy circles because they'd be the type of guys who wouldn't help shine the spotlight and who took this, you know, who took the hosting job and tried to make the show about them instead of about the other guys. So there's a lot of parallels, I think, between the two businesses.
Nick, I've got a few friends that are non-wrestling fans, and they always like to throw the word fake out there. I'm wondering if that word is considered offensive to someone like you who's had his ear ripped off in a match. Or
yeah, well, I don't use the F word that often. Right. Yeah, you know, I mean, they should try. I wish Lloyd's of London had felt the same way when they discontinued my disability insurance, you know. It's like, you know, it's hard to say it's fake when wrestlers are, you know, cashing in more than any other occupation in the world. I mean, these guys would, you know, they would insure just about anybody, but they stopped insuring wrestlers because, you know, the injuries that guys would work with that were kind of like an accepted part of the profession were career enders just about anywhere else. So, I mean, if Lloyd's of London says, you know, hell no, these MRIs and X-rays don't lie. I mean, I understand the word, but that's, you know, that's not the word we would use.
Right. I saw, changing the topic a little bit, I saw a thing online about a wrestling sitcom that you might be a part of.
Well, you know what? We put it up there. I did it about a year ago and didn't hear anything about it. I mean, I'd seen a really rough couple of minutes where just, you know, a few scenes from a few different shows were thrown together. And it was just yesterday that I saw, you know, these 3 7-minute episodes. They're up there on my website. I tweeted it out yesterday at Real Mick Foley. And, man, I thought they were really good. I mean, I was getting a lot of positive response. I mean, there's some funny stuff in there. And the scene I did with Martin Cove, who played the evil sensei in the first Karate Kid, I think it's a pretty good scene. And he's this bizarre, you know, owner of a wrestling company. He's like behind the times, and he's like, "Hey guys, I found a way to watch videos on the computer."
I believe that's the clip I watched.
Yeah.
You guys find like a backyard wrestler, and you're telling him, "Listen, you're not a wrestler." And he cuts this big promo on you, like, "I'm going to work every day to make you guys proud." And then he just completely reverses it. I found it to be quite entertaining.
Yeah.
I know we really enjoyed doing the show. I mean, I was just there, I think, for one day, and we did an awful lot in that one day. I mean, you know, and it was, you know, we talk about, you know, improv and coming up with things. I mean, I you know, the script called for me to be continually beating up the head writer because he'd taken my job. And so I was like, what if I, you know, called everything as I was doing it, you know? So they do a little montage where Martin Cove's like, "You have to stop beating Matthew up." And then they have me just tormenting this guy like, "Big chop!" And he wanted more than anything to take a chop that would leave an imprint, you know. And I'm like, geez, I haven't really chopped anybody in 15 years. Like, it's not really my thing. But they really wanted it, so I chopped him pretty good, about 10 different takes. And he was real proud of the welts all over his body. And, you know, I'd come out of nowhere like, "Forearm! Choke slam!" So it was good. They were really open to ideas I had. And who knows? I mean, I don't know how these things go. This was something that was shot instead of the standard way of doing a pilot, where hundreds of thousands of dollars are put into an idea that is very unlikely to come to fruition. You know, they did, you know, they had the studio set up, they shot in HD, and I thought it looked really good for not a lot of money. So yes, I really think if people, even if they're not wrestling fans, I think they could, in the same way, it's, somebody said it's like 30 Rock with wrestling, and, you know, that's not what I was thinking of it while we were doing it, but I guess it kind of is. Like,
yeah.
You don't have to be a fan of the girly show to love 30 Rock, you know, and you don't really have to be a fan of pro wrestling to get a kick out of this stuff.
Yeah, I thought it was great. I really hope to see maybe a web series come out of it, or at least, you know, at the very least.
Yeah, who knows? The scene of, people check it out, the one where Ken Anderson and I sabotage Matthew the writer's office is pretty good too.
And we can check that out on your website?
Well, not on my website, but
yeah,
on my Twitter,
okay.
At Real Mick Foley. And maybe I'll try to, I'll mention it to my web guy and try to throw it up there too on realmickfoley.com.
Do you have a fake Mick Foley impersonators?
Well, they did, yeah. Actually, it was several of them, yeah.
Really?
So, and just calling it real doesn't make it real.
Right.
So I did get, I finally got verified.
What's the process for getting verified?
You know, I guess it used to be easier. I don't know. I don't know. I had like well over 100,000 followers by the time I finally got verified. And it was just like a tweet from, you know, from a follower going, I can get you verified. It's like, okay. And then the next day I was verified. I have no idea what the process is.
So you didn't have to like send a picture of your license or, you know.
No, wow. Nothing. Yeah.
I think, you know, after 100,000 followers, I think it's pretty, you don't really need a check. People can kind of figure it out that it's, you know, the real Mick Foley.
I don't know. You know, for years, I guess there had been a fake me on Facebook, and he had like 10,000 people. and there's a couple of fake, you know, Mick Foley's working the independent circuits.
I think I'm friends with a fake Zack Ryder on Facebook.
Well, Zack's got his, you know, he's got like 400,000 people following them, so that's the real deal. But you know, these guys are like, no, it's a tribute, it's not a ripoff. And you're like, you know, when people go to see like the Elvis impersonator, they know it's not the guy,
right?
You guys are like deliberately misinforming people. Like, I've actually called the venues. I'm like, so Mick Foley's showing up, huh? Like, yeah, he's gonna be here. Like, well, I am Mick Foley. I'm not going to be there.
Oh, that's so great. Have you had any like lawsuits or anything?
It's really hard to do it. You know, it's funny. It's really difficult to pull that off.
Well, luckily, people getting you know, ripped off, they're not mad at you. They're mad at the people doing the show. So,
but the sad part is, like, more often than not, the people are like, yeah, we know it's not the real guy, but Foley. Oh, you know, man. And I've been on shows where it was just, you know, fakes up and down the up and down the card. One promoter, like, you know, taught like a kid to walk bow-legged, so he looked like a midget, and he was the first guy. You know, every wrestler in the '80s had a Russian wrestler, and his guy was a black Russian wrestler. So, teaching the kids how to walk like a little person. You know, only in wrestling.
Mick, what other professional wrestlers do you think could make it in comedy? Like Chris Jericho, The Rock?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if they wanted to, I think every guy could. It's almost like saying who could play, you know, I mean, everyone could play Little League Baseball up to a point if they had a certain skill set. I think every guy who's picked up a microphone and made people smile or laugh could do it to, you know, some extent. But it comes down to who can, you know, who really has the love for it. You know, who's willing to go and do the guest sets and, you know, and I mean, either, I guess there's inherent skills and timing can be learned, but there's a handful of guys out there who are doing it. Roddy Piper's done a bunch of it. I guess Raven has, Steve Carino's done a bunch of it. And, I could think of Tommy Dreamer would probably be good if he tried, like you said, The Rock, you know, Jericho, guys like that. I think, me and Piper have probably done the most of it, but that doesn't mean other people couldn't do it, and maybe possibly better.
Do you think you could do stand-up and wrestling at the same time?
Oh, you mean in the same venue?
At the same
time.
Hit
a guy and then tell a joke?
You've got a head mic and you're just...
The Rock used to do his own commentary when he wrestled for a little while, which was really, amusing. Yeah, I mean, there's nothing that can't be done. I think it's in a Beatles song, you know, nothing you can do that can't be done.
Right.
All you need is love. So it's not really a wrestling song.
Do you get fans, like, coming up to you asking you to shove a sock down their throat or anything or, you know, do moves on them?
Well, I'm not a sock. It's another white flaccid object that I pull out of my pants. It's a real crowd pleaser.
But do you get, like, requests from fans to do, like, moves on them? Or?
I do get asked about the sock, and, you know, some people, well, you know, headlocks and chokeholds and things like that. And then people will bring, you know, barbed wire bats to sign, all kinds of, you know, I mean, I've been at autograph signs, and the security guard will come up and be like, there's a guy with a bat wrapped in barbed wire. yeah, bring him up, yeah. Yeah, but you know what? I mean, we very rarely have. Every time I did a book signing, the people at the store would be terrified. They'd always act like every time we got out of there, you know, with our lives, that it was a good day. And I'm like, we never have a problem.
I actually met you once at the book signing for Scooter at the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Oh, hey, cool. Yeah, that was a cool event.
Yeah, I remember someone suggesting to you that they should include a barbed wire baseball bat in the actual Hall of Fame.
That'd be cool.
Maybe it would. I got a personal tour that day of the hall, and they were showing me some behind-the-scenes stuff, and it was like before people realized what a huge deal the hall would be, like, they would, like, put Babe Ruth's bat up by drilling a hole through it, like, bolting into the wall. The memorabilia wasn't treated with quite the respect that it... same way, I guess, in the old days, you know, they would tape a wrestling show for television, and then they would tape over it the next week. Johnny Carson had the same problem, believe it or not. He went to put together his 10th anniversary show and found out that a lot of the old ones had been taped over, and that's when he gained ownership. So I guess every type of, you know, entertainment form has gone through its growing pains.
Right. Well, Mick, it was really incredible to talk to you tonight. Thank you for calling in.
I appreciate it. I've got a call. I've been without a cell phone for 9 days now. So,
really?
Wow. Yeah, I'm going to call and see if I can't get a replacement. It's not showing up.
Wow.
So, you know, my wife and I are afraid that some of the photos on there are going to show up.
TMZ.
There you go.
A little scandal time.
Hey, it'd be great publicity for the comedy.
I don't know if people need to see me with a dog collar on. No, it's nothing too bad. Hey, thanks, guys. I appreciate it. And really, if somebody is out there listening and wants to take a gamble on the show, trust me, you know, you have Otto and George and Reverend Bob Levy, so even if I'm just horrible, it's still going to be a 2 out of 3 ain't bad, as, you know, a famous singer once sang.
And Mick, I hope someday soon you'll be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame.
You never know. I have to feel it's going to happen sometime. They're going to be running out of candidates pretty soon.
Well, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. I was just breathing hard.
I was just going to give an extra plug that we can see you with Bob Levy, Otto and George, and others at the Glenn Sanders Mansion. It's going to be tomorrow night and Saturday. Doors at 6:30, 9 p.m. show. The Glenn Sanders Mansion. It's going to be a great show, I think.
It should be a lot of fun. And thanks for letting me talk about it.
Of course, anytime.
Okay, have a great day.
Thank you, Mick.
All right, bye.
Bye. All right, Jason, what's your impression? I thought that was pretty great. We can, I'll give him an extra plug. You can get tickets going to WrestlingMarks.com. They've got a link right to the tickets. And they have a link to my interview with Bob Levy up there. I don't know if you saw that. Mick will be on Celebrity Wife Swap on January 31st. I'm really looking forward to that. It's going to be really cool. And you can see Mick with Reverend Bob Levy, Otto and George, the Hardcore Comedy Tour at the Glenn Sanders Mansion in Scotia, New York. I think that's up by Schenectady?
Just past Schenectady.
And that's going to be tomorrow night and Saturday night, the 20th and the 21st, 9 o'clock shows, 6:30 doors. There's incentives for getting your tickets early, and they do have a little bit more expensive for passes to actually meet them before the show, which sounds like a lot of fun. It's at the Glenn Sanders Mansion, 1 Glenn Ave, Scotia, New York, 12302. So, Jason, what do you think? I thought that was incredible. Mick was a really great guy.
I thought so as well, and I was actually surprised you let me jump in on that one.